Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Jonathan, close the door. I left the lights off just to set the mood.
It's so central, and you have a haircut.
I do. They went a little too short.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
It looks good.
Well, thank you. That's generous.
Yeah. You maintained your front tuft.
That's what Scott Bass refers to as the chop hop.
Yeah. It's been preserved.
It has.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Did you get your hair washed?
No.
You do, when they go for the wash, you say, no, no need.
Dude,
no need
me
for
and
that.
The chicks at Hair Safari had that conversation years ago.
That's real good.
I had a internal conflict for a while there. It's a cheap haircutting place, like a barber shop, basically, but it's all middle-aged women. $16 haircuts. And
that's a steal.
Yeah. Well, I stepped up for a while. I thought, I'm a grown man. I have a healthy head of hair. I should have a stylish cut, right?
Like $50 haircuts?
So I went for it, and I tried three different places, and they all were equivalent to my $16 haircut.
Yeah.
And then the hairstylists in those places were like, oh, no, you got to come three or four times so we can, like,
train it, get it.
I went that many times. It did nothing. The $16 haircut's just as good.
How well do you tip at your $16 place?
$5.
Oh, okay.
So percentage-wise, it's great, but it's dollar-wise, it's not significant.
Yeah.
You know?
Huh.
But at any rate, my conflict was I want my haircut. Like, one or two of them are better than the other two.
Ooh.
But I don't feel comfortable walking in. Like, I want Chantel.
Yeah, but you can't book with Chantel.
I could, but even that looks like I have favorites. So if I walk in and Chantel's busy and Lou is empty and Lou's like, hey, come, you know, to my chair. I feel bad going, no, I'm going to wait for Chantel because it makes Lou feel bad.
So who'd you have yesterday?
Chantel. But she went too short.
But it's a good haircut. Chantel was a good call.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. I'm happy with her. She just likes to talk a lot.
Yeah.
That's a problem for me.
What do you talk about?
She wants to talk about her kids. She always asks where I'm traveling or where I'm going. So I'll make a lot of small talk. Like, I'll fill in the void. But I'd rather there was dead silence and she just cut my hair in 10 minutes.
In general, as a rule of thumb, do you prefer if somebody wants conversation, do you prefer to be the person who makes the conversation? Or will you just give as little as possible and try to string conversation out from them?
It goes through a pattern. I do what you just said first. I will give as little as possible, hoping they pick up the cue and shut up. And then lots of times they'll lull me into it. And once I engage, I actually am comfortable, obviously, talking. And then what's weird is I actually enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I'm always thwarting my own interests in trying to avoid it, because in the end, it turns out I'm a social being and I enjoy it.
Beautiful human interaction.
Yeah.
I'll give you a pro tip here.
Okay.
Go to conversation. If you have to be in conversation with somebody, airplane, you know, somewhere particular, like your hairstylist is one thing, I think, because you know that it's a limited window.
Chantel.
Like, you know that you're going to be on that chair, what, max? 30 minutes max, yeah?
Oh,
45?
Yeah. Max.
Yeah.
Max. 30.
So, whatever, even if you don't want to talk, it's going to end. Get on a plane, sitting next to somebody, say you got a good LA to Sydney flight and you got 13 hours, 15 hours. What is that flight these days?
15. I don't know.
15 hours and you know you got a talker next to you, what do you do?
Headphones.
Oh, okay. You're a smart man.
Yeah. Let's say you don't have headphones and I'll play your game.
If you have to get in a conversation, the easiest thing I feel is to just go straight to streaming, Netflix, whatever you're watching, and then out.
Okay.
Like, no personal anything. Just, right. Oh, yeah. What are you watching?
Yeah. So, airplanes are the worst of that
worst,
scenario.
The worst.
The second worst, massage.
Oh, yeah.
Do not talk to me.
But that's why I don't get massages, full stop.
Really?
I do not get massages 50% on that.
Huh.
I mean, not because I dislike talking to people, but... Yeah. Massages make me real uncomfortable. I'm going to be honest.
You don't enjoy it?
No.
I love it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do not like massages.
How are you about physical affection in general?
Yeah, fine.
You're okay with touching?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's not a touch thing. It's just, the thing with the massage, I feel it's not masculine. Like, inherently not masculine, even though James Bond had plenty of massages.
Mike Tyson, in between rounds, would be getting massages.
Of course, of course. I know in my mind that it's totally fine for a man to get a massage. In my heart, though, I'm not there. I feel like a big sissy, and so then I'm only considering myself a big sissy as this thing's going.
Yeah, but I never viewed you as having an issue looking like a sissy.
I know, I don't.
I don't. You don't present as masculine.
I don't.
Take this in which the spirit is intended. Dude.
Yeah, yeah. I know. That's why it's a heart thing. It's like, I don't care how I look, as long as I feel masculine. So it's not about somebody's going to see this happen. And I have no... That's not my issue. My issue is internal. It's the way I'm feeling.
Would it matter if it's a male masseuse versus a female masseuse?
Nope. Huh. I feel... I don't like being pampered in general. I've never had I've never had, you know, a manicure... Or maybe I've one time got a fluke manicure or something. But, you know, I don't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, God bless our sponsor, manscaped.com. Manscaped.
But trim yourself.
But I've never even, between us, I've never used it yet. Like, the pampering is not something that I do.
Okay. Hygienic grooming does not fall into the category of pampering.
See, that's a real slippery slope right there.
Do you brush your teeth?
Yes.
Do you floss?
No.
Really?
No. I haven't read somewhere, you know when there's that study that backs up what you already believe?
Yeah.
There was one.
Yeah, you can find that anywhere on the internet.
Exactly. There was one that came out that got some press a couple years ago that was like, flossing is completely, it's not bad, but it's been overvalued. Like, it really doesn't do anything.
I fully disagree with that. And we actually had this conversation one time.
We did.
And
I think probably right when the study came out. I was so thrilled about it.
You came in with a printed copy of the study and handed it to me. And then a listener chimed in who is a dentist.
Yeah, and said it absolutely is helpful.
Right, which is just one dentist's opinion. But the most interesting part was, I don't know how he and I got into it, but he revealed to me that his good friend dated Amy Schumer.
Oh.
The comedian.
I remember this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was like telling me about all of the benefits that he got from hanging out with that friend, where they'd go private jet to wherever, you know, first class, everything.
Most interesting people in the world listen to this show.
Yeah,
or at least people related to the most, or friends of the most interesting people in the world.
You know what? Somebody actually just DM'd me. I wasn't even going to bring it up, but he's like, hey, was there a show where you and Chaz were talking about, is it better to look good or feel good? And which episode was that? Can you find? And I'm like, dude, I have no idea.
That sounds like a great conversation.
If it came up, it came up in chat. It wasn't like scheduled. So I'm sure I didn't include it in the website's show notes, you know, but we can have that conversation for him now instead.
I mean, that's a fantastic conversation. I like it.
So if you had to choose, let's say, I feel like we need to put some stakes on this. Like,
how good am I going to look?
Brad Pitt.
Oh, look good.
So you're going to look, you are going to be the envy of all other males and the desire of all females.
I would take coronavirus for the rest of my life if I could look like Brad Pitt.
Really?
Daily coronavirus. Like, I don't know how coronavirus makes you feel. Speaking of, how worried are you about pandemics in general?
Not at all.
Me either. So
zero.
I feel that whatever these things are like different versions of colds and flus. I would have a cold/flu for the rest of my life if I could look like Brad Pitt.
Wow.
What about you?
What's the example of a Brad Pitt but for health?
Laird Hamilton. I mean, if you
so,
just
and what's the opposite in terms of looks? If so, I could feel like Laird, but look like.
Well, let's just say you look like you. Let's say you're no uglier.
I'm fine with that.
So you would take take looking like you and just feeling great.
I think the stakes need to be more extreme.
Okay, well, at what point would you...
You look like Lyle Lovett.
Lyle Lovett, I think, is a good-looking guy. He married Julia Roberts.
I know, but that was the whole joke, is that he's so ugly and he married Julia Roberts.
Lyle Lovett is an acquired taste, because that was the joke on the surface. But once you start staring at Lyle Lovett, like Julia Roberts did, and maybe it's just because Lyle Lovett looks like me... Slim, tall.
You guys have the same build.
We do. And the same face. And the same like face shape. His face is so narrow. I've got a narrow face too.
I think she fell in love with his talent.
He's a talented man, that Lyle Lovett.
Is he?
I think so. I once downloaded, bought, purchased. Do you purchase albums, by the
Never.
Way? I see, I still do. But once, even probably when it was inappropriate to do, I bought a Lyle Lovett like double album.
I actually buy vinyl.
Oh, okay.
I hate to admit that.
Yeah.
People are going to make fun of that. But you know what's funny? My friend's son got a Walkman for Christmas, like a cassette tape Walkman.
Was it like a retro, haha, look at this? This is the way we used to listen to music?
They were going through grandparents' things who had passed away, and they found a mixtape that the grandpa had made for the grandma.
Oh.
And the kid was like, I would love to hear what's on this and listen to it. So the dad went and bought a brand new Walkman off Amazon. And so for Christmas, I bought the kid a bunch of cassette tapes. Went to the local record shop, which, by the way, I thought I was just going to be buying used tapes. They're still printing new tapes.
That's crazy.
So
I didn't know that.
Hipster artists nowadays, they print in vinyl, cassettes, CD, and digital.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like it.
Weird, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any benefit to listening to a cassette tape, whereas vinyl, you could argue.
It sounds better.
Auditorily.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, okay, let's say you look like, who's an ugly man that we can all agree is ugly?
Steve Buscemi.
I've been called Steve Buscemi before.
Dude. People are just zinging you. Yeah. Do you not realize these people were trying to insult you?
Yeah.
You took Lyle Lovett as a compliment?
Nobody's ever called. I just feel like I look like Lyle Lovett. Nobody's ever told me that. I just feel, I feel like kinship with Lyle Lovett. But,
these are all insults that you interpret.
Okay, let's say you look like Steve Buscemi, but you feel great. You feel really good. You wake up in the morning with vim and vigor. You sleep 8 hours, no problem. There's no toss, no turn.
Man, I really want to look like Brad Pitt, but I think I got to go with option B.
Wow.
I think I got to go with feeling good.
Looking good.
The thing is, you can survive in our society. Like, you can thrive with ambition and vim and vigor. It's a lot harder to trade on your look. To trade on your look.
You can, if I was looking like Brad Pitt, I would just go slouch sickly into meetings and get whatever I wanted.
I would enjoy it. You'd get what you wanted. You just wouldn't enjoy it.
I'd be enjoying it.
Terrible all the time.
It's okay.
You would have to develop a crazy drug habit to lift you back up.
Yeah, that'd be okay too.
Yeah.
I mean, you be here for a good time, not a long time.
So whatever money you're earning based on your looks,
you're pumping back into your opioid addiction.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just to
level out.
Yeah. Just to fuzz everything away.
Well, I hope that answered our listeners' inquiry.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was the exact same conversation we had whenever that
Roll
was.
Roll the tape.
Yeah.
Speaking of substance use, you're taking the month off from booze.
Yeah.
We've had this conversation a couple of times over the years.
I've taken time off from booze a couple times over the years.
And how is dry January going? And how many times have you actually slipped up and had a drink?
I've had, 23 days? 24 days?
We're on January 74th, it feels like.
Man, how long has January felt?
It goes on forever.
It's really true. I didn't think about it until I looked at the calendar today and just thought... It has honestly felt like 2 years have passed in these however many days.
We've been in 2020 for 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, 2020, it used to take me, I think, a minute to get into writing, 2020. Like, I would stumble up writing checks or whatever, 2019. I'm, accidentally writing 2021 at this point. That's how long it feels like
Totally.
We've been in 2020. Totally. I'm tired of it. I'm bored of 2020.
When was the last check that you wrote?
That's a good question. I was thinking that as I said that.
I was
too. I write checks to the gardener.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, like twice a week I'll write a check.
Okay. Yeah. That's way more than the average person.
I mean, once every 2 weeks, I should say. Sorry.
Even still.
Yeah.
So, booze.
Yeah. I think I've had eight drinky days in the last 24, so dry-ish. One third of the month, but one of those drinky days was I had like one beer, and, you know, so basically I haven't been tipsy or even lightly buzzed all January.
And has that been a benefit, or weigh it out for me.
Yeah.
Do you feel better?
No. I feel the same. It took a while to get into it, like to dry out. I think I really needed to dry the brain out. And so that's been beneficial, I think. Like, I think I am kind of seeing things in a slightly new way, maybe. Like, I think it just became the consistency of booze became such a thing that I was doing that I was just starting to think the same way, I think, which I don't like that.
I'm glad that you're saying this because I feel that exact way, but I've never put it into words, or I've never actually even thought about it, taking the time. But that's exactly what happens to me as well.
It slightly shifts your perspective.
Yeah.
And that shift in perspective is, to me, what's interesting. And it takes longer to get there. I think I lean on booze to get a shifted perspective quickly, right? Yeah. I got work to do, like for me at least, writing. Like, I need to kind of jolt my brain a little over. Booze is the go-to for that. I mean, and I think like it is for, that's why all writers are drunks, I think, right? Is like, you can snap your brain into funny perspective. But I think once you snap your brain into that perspective enough, then that's just the main perspective. And so to dry out, it takes a, because there's no snap back. It slowly rotates somewhere else. But I've enjoyed the slow rotation.
Beautiful articulation of this.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But I think, I think I'm going to change my behaviors, my relationship with booze entirely.
What's the new relationship look like?
Well, it's just not going to be drinking every day, rotely. It'll be
moderation, balance.
Balance, moderation, but not balance for balance sake. It'll be when there's a reason to drink, I'll hammer it. Or if I, like, that's the thing. Me and friends have, not disagreement, but, I will use booze as utility. He's always very scared of thinking about booze as utility because I think he feels that's your straight slip into alcoholism when booze becomes a tool. But I've always considered booze a tool. But I'm just going to be wiser when I use that tool. I'm not going to lean on that tool unnecessarily.
The problem with what you said is that there's always a reason to drink.
There always is.
There's like where you and I, the lives that we live and where we live, there's social events 7 days a week.
It's funny. I'm not a social drinker, though. I could go out and be out without a drink happily. Like, the alcoholic kind. I'm a, like, solo in my house, pouring vodka into whatever garbage I can find.
Is also an occasion daily.
Yeah.
Like, you could also find reason
to completely. So that's, so it's being more, just having more willpower of, like, okay, I got to write this thing, or I got to do this thing, and a booze would really kick me into doing this right now, but stopping and saying nope.
I don't know. Like,
I'll hit it without, and I'll save it for when I actually really do need it.
I don't know. It's funny that you say that. I don't know that willpower. I don't really feel a need to exercise willpower. It's not like I have a drive to drink. It just becomes routine. And so then all I have to do is acknowledge that, oh, this is a routine that I don't want to be in, and I could stop. And it's not like a hard thing to stop for me. Whereas I think some people do have this real drive to do it.
Well, and I think some people obviously have like a chemical dependence on it, right? Of course. Where I'll get the initial kick of like, oh, wouldn't a drink be helpful for you right now?
Yeah.
Mostly. Not even feel good as much as would, you know, you could really use a drink right now to get over this, you know, mental block or to do this thing or whatever it is. And then, yeah, just to pause and say, nope, it's got to be hard yards here. I'm going to have to get over that mental block just by pushing through.
Well, the funny thing is about what you're saying, you get into this mental headspace if you're drinking every day, like that's very kind of limited and narrow in range. Same thing if you're abstinent.
Yeah, totally.
Like if you completely cut it off, you also, but on the other end of the spectrum. So it's nice to be able to, like you said, use it when you need it.
Completely.
Yeah. To add some creativity. Let's talk about surfing a little bit.
Man, Let's try.
What are you writing? Is going to be my first question. Are you surfing and what are you writing?
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually on... I've been meaning to talk about it. It's such a fun board. It is an album twin fin. Not asymmetrical.
A fish?
Symmetrical. It's not... It's like hybrid e-fish, kind of. It's like... I'll call it a high-performance fish, I suppose.
Okay.
It's not super fished out. It's got a wider... I don't even know how to call the shape of the tail. It's like not square, but it's, yeah, an interesting shaped tail. It's not a swallow or fishy shaped tail. It's something interesting.
But it has a notch cut in it, like a swallowtail?
No, it has notches out like this.
Wings.
Wings, exactly. That's what it is. Hips. Wings, hips. Yeah. And twin, but there's a mini little fin dragger for the third if you want, but I haven't done it. And I've been having so much fun. For the first time in my life, I will say, on this board, I've been able to properly whip it off the lip, off the top.
Like, slide the tail a little bit or get a little release?
Like, really go up and have, like, a round, like, a snappy turn. And I'm sure it looks like absolute crap, but it feels like I've never been able to do that. I've never been able to whip it and then, like, yeah, get a little bit of, release.
Controlled release.
Exactly.
How big's the board?
I do believe it is 5'11".
Okay.
Yeah.
So a little bit shorter than your height you would ride it?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and very, very, very fun. Not too much volume, but it paddles super, super great. Like, gets into waves, no problem. And really, really fast. That speed down the line, oof. Yeah, I've been loving it. I've borrowed it from Matt Parker's album to take to Nicaragua.
Oh, and okay.
Still haven't given it back.
Gotcha.
Uh-oh.
I did that with my last board that he loaned me to.
That's the problem with an album board, and I hate to sound... I mean, we are sitting here in albums, so I guess it's nice to give credit where credit is due. But those boards are so... Matt's boards are so, so fun.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if he has a loaner program or whatnot, but if you live anywhere near Southern California, so worth coming down and trying one out.
Do you pay for surfboards? When was the last surfboard that you paid for?
Last surfboard I paid for was, I think, a Lost, and I got like the team rider rate, and that would have been 7 years ago. Yeah, but I'm not. I'm
officially
also
sponsored, dude.
Yeah, I'm sponsored by album, but I'm also not a board freak. Like, yeah. I'm not always on the next board. Like, I'll get a board that I like and really ride it to the ground.
Do you ever sell boards?
No.
How many boards do you have at home?
I have probably 8.
Oh, 9. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a relatively small amount.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a
hoarder.
Right. So when Derek was out here last,
Derek's a hoarder.
Well, he was advocating for a one board quiver.
Oh yeah, that's true. I take it all back. Derek's ridden the same board for a long time.
It didn't dawn on me till after we ended the conversation, but I have a feeling he also only rides short boards.
Yes.
So that's kind of why a one board quiver, because to him, in his mind, he's like, you know, I don't need a slight variation of my 5'11". Whereas in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I want a fish, I want a mid length, I want a high performance short board.
Those stinking Channel Islands mid lengths, man. Have you ridden one yet?
No. Have you?
No. We have to have Devin on the show, because I can't remember the last time I rode a mid-length. I'm sure I have, for sure, like a rental board at, you know, one vacation where I forgot, and that's all they had was like a 7.3 or, you know, I'm sure at some point in my life I've ridden one. I don't have a memory of riding a mid-length. I'm still so mentally opposed to mid-lengths. I'd hate the idea of it. I feel that the second I get on one, it is me giving up. It is me cashing in and saying, whoop. You get older and you got power, get more weight. I mean, the next thing I know, I'm on a 9-foot sup just burning people out the back.
Dude, I felt that same exact way. I understand the feeling. I know what you're going through. It's a complete shift of perspective.
We need to get Devin Howard back on, because I really want to hammer fucking Devin Howard.
He told me. He's texted me a week or two ago and he said he's going to come on and... He's going to get together with Warshaw in advance. They're going to come up with a trivia game for you and I to play. Devin's going to come in, and he's going to give us surf trivia, like historical trivia.
Fantastic.
And whoever wins gets a CI mid-length.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm going to lose. I'm so going to lose on purpose. But that mid-length, It looks, I'll lose no matter what. But that mid-length does, that's the problem. That's my problem. My problem is I watch Devin Howard on that mid-length on Instagram, and that's exactly how I want to feel surfing.
Mm-hmm.
That's also how I want to look surfing, just not on that big board. But that's the way you get to look that way, right? It's so flowy.
Yep.
It's so beautiful.
Yep.
I mean, Devin Howard is... Fucking Devin Howard is accidentally becoming my favorite surfer.
Yep.
Watching Devin Howard surf on Instagram. Do you watch Devin Howard surf on Instagram?
I do.
I feel dirty. I feel like I'm really giving a dirty porn secret here. But I will stop. Most pros, Elo, all of them, right? I'll flick through. It's great. It's high. It's crazy. Oh, wow. You know, whatever. But I won't stop. Devin Howard, I will stop and watch and rewatch and likely rewatch again every single one of Devin Howard's Instagram clips.
So what is the porn analogy? You just said this is like a dirty porn admission. Because Idolo is the porn star shaved plastic fake boobs. What is the equivalent?
It's got to be 70s porn, I guess.
Devin?
Yeah, right?
70s, all natural.
Right?
Just traditional man and woman.
Low. Yeah, traditional man and woman.
Missionary style.
No even real funky positions.
Full bush? Moderate bush?
I mean, normal, because none of it's freaky.
Well, it's the 70s.
But also, Devin is not surfing freakily retro.
No.
I don't consider the way Devin Howard surfs as retro at all, do you?
Right. No, I don't at all.
This is my massive malfunction going on right now.
Yeah.
I hate mid-lengths. The person that I love surfing the most is Devin Howard on a mid-length.
Yep.
I'm almost suicidal here.
Real internal conflict.
I mean, it's so massive that I'm just getting ripped apart at the seams.
Good.
I don't know what to do about this.
So you'll come out, you'll rise from the ashes like a phoenix, dude. This is what you need to go through.
On a mid-length.
Yes.
Will I surf like Devin Howard?
No. There's no chance. I mean, with 20 years of committing to it, maybe, but you won't, but you'll get... You'll surf better than you're surfing now.
Really?
Yes, 100%, dude. What Devin is doing is riding a board it's meant to be ridden on the given waves that he's riding.
Which is, I mean, see, again, the waves that I ride more often than not would be ideally suited for a mid-length.
Exactly.
I mean, Cardiff by the Sea is basically mid-length heaven, right?
It would be, yeah.
But there I am. Like, all those horrible, horrible people who have given up out there on mid-lengths. I'm one of them.
They're not giving up. They're having the time of their lives, dude. Come around. Don't worry. This is the exact thing that we're talking about with booze. This is moderation.
Exactly. But see, I don't want to... This makes me want to go home and just start hammering a full bottle of vodka and wake up and do it again the next day and again. I want a Nick Cage Leaving Las Vegas now.
Oh, because, it's such a good film.
It's a great film.
Love Elizabeth Shue.
Man, Elizabeth Shue had such a hot run.
Gosh.
Like, she was a number one, I feel, in sort of the indie set.
Yep.
But Elizabeth Shue was, like, the best actress for like 4 years.
Yep.
Not best maybe acting wise, but best like the one that had everybody's hearts just pounding.
Where right? is she now?
That's the problem. I realize the older I get, you think back in those days, you think Elizabeth Shue, she's going to have a forever long career, right?
You would think.
She's indie darling. She's been in great films. It'll just go and go and go and go for Elizabeth Shue. The older I get now and you realize how short people's runs are in general, where like the standouts like Brad Pitt or Leonardo DiCaprio or whatever is ridiculously unheard of to have that kind of consistent run where most people even, I mean, who's a big star today? Who's a big male or female star?
Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling, I'll say, is on the verge of a long run. But yeah, Ryan Gosling could theoretically never do another movie. For 5 years, he felt like he was everything.
Yeah.
But you could look back on this 5 years and say, oh, that was a tiny window where this guy named Ryan Gosling mattered.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
Like, and yeah, good one with Ryan Gosling.
Remember the other, I don't know, a few episodes ago, I brought up Farrah Fawcett on Charlie's Angels and Chevy Chase on Saturday Night Live. They each did one season.
Yeah.
One season, and that cements their legacy.
But even Ryan Gosling, I would say, Ryan Gosling doesn't have... If Ryan Gosling stopped acting today, would not have a cemented legacy.
No, he wouldn't.
Like, it would
be Notebook, maybe, is what people would know him for.
But people would, like, kind of rack their brains and be like, oh, yeah, that's, I liked a couple of his movies.
Right.
Like, but it wouldn't be like, oh, man, Ryan Gosling. Like, Farrah Fawcett, I think of as iconic, and yes, so true. Chevy Chase also. Whereas Ryan Gosling, again, if he stopped acting today. But just imagine. So Ryan Gosling, though, has to be looking at movies down the line that not only he's got to find, like, the right indie one mixed with kind of the right blockbuster, but you can't go too blockbustery because then you become, you know, Ben Affleck. Like, you can't do that. I mean, Ben Affleck at this point is a full flash in the pan, right?
Yeah.
Imagine Ben Affleck is a flash in the pan. Matt Damon's not.
No.
Matt Damon.
Elizabeth Shue. I'm going to look her up later today.
Yeah, I'm sure she's...
I would love to know what she's doing.
I'm sure she's doing something. I mean, that's the other...
She might have just ended up in Idaho raising a family or something.
Totally. I mean, and women have it so much harder than men. Like, I think men, you can act...
In terms of longevity?
Yeah, you can just act old as a man. But yeah. Women, so... I mean, there's even fewer older. I mean, Meryl Streep is basically it. I mean, there's one.
They showed a photo of her with Robert De Niro...
Meryl?
Recently, yeah, like at a recent award show, and then side by side with them from Deer Hunter, I think it was, when they were young, she's aged more gracefully than De Niro.
Oh, yeah.
She really hasn't aged. I mean, she's aged today, but not that much, and De Niro just looks so old and haggard.
Seeing De Niro and Pacino and did you see him at the table? What at the...
SAG or Golden Globes?
Whatever, Golden Globes, yeah. They looked like such weird freaks, all of them. It was honestly like... some Italian guys got put in a blender and totally. Then like other weird stuff got put in there, hair product it, and
more
implants.
It's Madame Tussauds versions of them, but melted slightly.
It was so bizarre. They looked so bizarre. We should find a picture of their table. Yeah. Martin Scorsese, I mean, he looks kind of the same, but in that company, they all just looked completely bizarre.
Well, speaking of Devin Howard writing a mid-length, the other person that I've been enjoying recently, Asher Pacey on the album Fish.
Oh, yeah.
And this is not an album advertisement, even though we are recording here today. But honestly, whenever that footage comes up too, and I guess Asher's recently been writing albums and album, and he almost exclusively rides Fish. And so album designed a fish for Asher to ride. And I watch that footage and I'm like, dude, that is how surfing is supposed to be. Like,
yeah.
There's not a moment where he's out of position or using energy in the wrong way.
I mean, that's
beautiful.
It's really, this is just such an old man conversation. But watching that flow on the wave as opposed to watching a wave get destroyed, where I guess I love watching waves get destroyed when I'm watching CT events. But outside of that, like,
it's not relatable. That's the problem.
But it's like
we watch Devin and we think that we could do what Devin did if we just had the right wave and the right board.
Yeah.
Whereas Italo, I don't even...
No.
Had no delusions.
Well, and all you're doing, like, and maybe that's why Italo's Instagram is not, to me, not interesting, because I need to see Italo versus Gabe Medina, right? Like, it's apples and apples in one heat where I'm not measuring myself against either of them. I'm measuring them against each other. Where Instagram, when you're just looking at one surfer, I feel you're always, I mean, maybe not. Are you always? I feel like I'm always kind of vaguely feeling... Oh, that's how, you know, I like what he's doing there. I would like to try, I would dream to incorporate that or whatever, right? Like when I'm watching Instagram surfers, I'm putting myself there.
Yeah.
I never once put myself in a CT heat.
No. Totally. Like,
I'm not there, ever. I mean, yeah. I only put myself in a CT heat when I'm watching, when it's big, and like big Chopu, and watching guys paddle out who are scared, then I put myself there thinking, oh man, that's how I would feel. And
I can really relate to William Cardoso right now.
Completely.
All right, well.
What are you riding?
So, I actually just purchased.
Good to see, good on
paid
you.
For.
Yeah.
A shortboard.
Full pop?
I don't think it was full pop. I didn't ask, but no, I don't think it was full pop.
Was it shaped for you?
It was. Custom made. I'm going to Hawaii on Monday.
Oh, congrats.
Thanks. So, ordered it from Chris Stone, formerly Chris Gallagher from Santa Cruz fame, but our current U.S. Olympic
coach.
Head coach.
Yeah.
He's also a shaper and a coach. And, I mean, he's obviously a coach, but he's also a shaper and based out of the North Shore. And has been building – he was coach for Jordy for a lot of years, and he's built a bunch of boards for Jordy. So, I was like, dude, I'm coming to Hawaii. Just make me a shortboard basically to ride the North Shore.
6'2"?
Something like that. I forget exactly. I kind of left it up to him. But yeah, thruster, pintail.
How sad are you when you put your brand new board in your board bag, and when it arrives, the nose is broken off or something? Like,
honestly, it's never happened to me.
Oh, man. It's my sweet album that I took to Nicaragua. Poor Matt Parker doesn't know this yet, but arrived in Nicaragua, and the nose busted right off.
No way.
It was the that much of the nose, so I've just continued to surf it like nothing's wrong. But it's still annoying. Like, it was such a beautiful board, and just looking down, and the nose just broken off.
Was it absorbing water?
Doesn't seem like it is. Huh. I should probably patch it up.
I love how well you take care of other people's.
I know. It's well, my instinct, of course, is to just smear wax all over it, which I didn't. I refrained from doing that, assuming that it'll soak in probably a little water, and what he'll do is have to shave it off anyway and somehow toothpick a. I don't know how you repair it, but
not with toothpicks.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I would repair it.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to get some toothpick and some duct tape and... I mean, I'm sure they have a thick supply of duct tape here at Album. Well, my dilemma when traveling, I wouldn't be to Nicaragua. I don't know a lot of board manufacturers in Nicaragua, but Hawaii, it's like, dude, I'm going to pay $150 each way. If I bring a board from here to there, it's a hassle to lug. I could just buy a board there.
Yeah.
But then I always find myself in the position of, well, I got to get it home.
Yeah.
So I'm still paying half of the airfare. Yeah. But on American, there's no board bag fees anymore.
Yeah.
So I ordered the board from Chris, and then realized, like, oh, shoot, I could just bring a board for free.
So your board is waiting for you there.
It's waiting for me there.
Okay, well, just bring a bag and fly it home for free.
Bring a bag. There you go. Yeah. That's a good idea. All right, so congratulations, by the way, on your Surfer's Journal article.
Oh, thanks.
We had Sean Parkin on the show last week. You never even mentioned that you had an article being published.
Yeah, I can never remember either, to be honest. I wrote that thing so long ago.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Or not. Yeah. I mean, a few months ago. I think there was a lot of transition there for a minute with Nathan taking over and all that. So I had honestly completely forgotten about it until it came in the mail. And then I was like, why'd I get a Surfer's Journal?
Do you want to tell listeners what the article's about? So then go out there and subscribe?
Yeah, go subscribe to the Surfer's Journal. I'll give you just...
To read Chaz's article.
Yep, it's worth it. It's worth it alone for that article.
What was it about?
About the Florida surf... About surf film in general. About the death of surf film.
The death?
Yeah, surf film being a dead medium.
So, what's the premise of the article?
Well, the premise is that I think everybody thinks that surf film is dead, but actually, like vinyl, it's alive and thriving, just in a different way,
making a resurgence too.
Completely. I mean, yeah. Exactly like vinyl. I think surf film, again, we said it once, said it a million times, but the way to experience surf film is with other people, publicly. And so these surf film festivals that, I mean, there's a maybe I'm just more aware of them because of the Lisa film or whatever, but it feels like there's just a massive boom in festivals, surf film festivals, right?
Yeah.
But it all makes perfect sense to me because that is the way to experience surf film. Like, there's no point, I don't really think, in downloading a surf film and watching it at home, unless you're a kid and, you know, going to get amped up or whatever. But I mean, there's so much, again, said it once, said it a million times, there's so much content on Instagram and such an inundation of surf footage that what's the point of a surf film? The point of a surf film is to watch it with other people.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I mean, the Florida Surf Film Festival has really opened my eyes to that.
Yep.
The caveat to what you're saying is documentary is worth watching at home.
Sure. I mean, so documentary is something different. Totally. That's not a surf film.
Totally. And there's a lot of great surf, not a lot, but there are great surf-related documentaries now.
Except for Kelly Slater 24/7.
Except for that. and then there was one, I'm trying to think of the name of it, but there was one that we saw at the Florida Surf Film Festival that I think Albie Layer just posted raving about on Instagram, and it was the one that has the Grateful Dead soundtrack.
Yeah,
and
Fire on the Mountain.
Fire on the Mountain, that's what it is.
Rob Machado.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's all of the illuminated surfing at night and illuminated snowboarding and stuff where people are wearing body suits that are illuminated.
I'm going to have a Beach Grit interview with Rob on Fire in the Mountain. I was supposed to do it forever ago, but soon. So we'll get
What's the premise
insight
behind it? Like, who funded the thing? Why did they make it? How does it see a return on the money?
This is all very... I can't remember exactly, but I'm just going to say what I know. Which is, not that it's a secret, but the details are fuzzy, but it was something like
the filmmaker somehow had a connection, knew somebody who knew the Grateful Dead, and the Grateful Dead has never, doesn't license their music for stuff. And, you know, it's would be prohibitively expensive to get a Grateful Dead song. But somehow Grateful Dead liked this guy, the director, and they all liked to, I don't know, vaguely surf or snowboard, something. They were into the lifestyle, into it. And they just said, hey, why don't you do, you know, use our music and do something. And so it was like a full on, I don't think he had to pay licensing fees or anything. And then, yeah, I can't remember. I think it's Patagonia, isn't it?
I think you might be right.
I think so. So
there
it has
were a couple of brands that were definitely like behind the project.
So I'll get the inside scoop from Rob, but I think it's as that's how it all got started. Is somebody in the Grateful Dead or who has rights or access to the Grateful Dead's library liked this director and liked the idea of this surf snow thing, and that was it.
Even if there's no licensing fees, there was $50,000 worth of art LED, direction, LED production, travel expense.
Oh, for sure, it was
at
it,
least.
Yeah, yeah, it was not a cheap film. I think when you get probably Grateful Dead's, because then all of a sudden I would imagine, and again talk to Rob, but I would imagine that the film appeals to a Grateful Dead fan, and so you'll get people to buy the film well outside of the action sports world.
I don't think you buy it. I think it's available for free right now on YouTube.
Well then, yeah.
So how do they make money on that?
So I mean, maybe it's worth it to Patagonia just like as a straight marketing. I mean, you know, films I don't think make money anyway, so, or much. Like, I think by and large, they're marketing exercises. I mean, I guess people are making indie films and probably hoping to
if turn you it sell it. I mean, you could sell it to a streaming service and make money, but if it's a short film,
yeah,
you want it.
Yeah. Well, I got to get to the bottom of this. Yeah, it is a beautiful film.
It's so good.
I hate the Grateful Dead and like the movie.
Yeah, I don't hate. We had this long conversation in the car with Scott Hewlett about the Grateful Dead. I don't hate the Grateful Dead, but I don't love the Grateful Dead either. That was not a draw for me to watch the movie. But the movie, the footage is all amazing. And then also, I remember there being like a bunch of animation interstitials that were also, again, like expensive.
Yeah, to make. It was not a cheap.
It was a great film.
Yep.
Just fantastic. In terms of like a piece of art as a film, it was great.
Yep.
You know what the other thing I learned about Florida, speaking of Florida Surf Film Festival, the other thing I learned about Florida this week is that it's actually the home to the greatest number of shark attacks in the world. 21 unprovoked shark attacks. There's only been 11 in Australia, 9 in Hawaii, 1 in Reunion Island, and
0 in South Africa. South Africa is the one that should be ashamed.
Drop the ball, dude.
Shame, South Africa.
Yeah.
All you South Africans out pounding your chest for all their great white sharks, shame. They're little babies.
I mean, I don't know if they just had the right PR team for all those years or if there was actual attacks there, but
it feels like it's good PR.
It's synonymous.
Yeah.
Shark attacks, South Africa.
They got really, really, really lucky with the McFanning thing.
Totally.
I mean, that was just, they had been pushing it for a long time and then just like a PR just explosion right there.
There. So we're on to you, South Africa. You were trying to dissuade tourist surfers from coming and surfing your point breaks. We see through that smokescreen.
All of it. Where surfers should not go is Florida, though, because you're pretty much guaranteed to get bit.
Guaranteed. The percentages of people getting bit, I think it's like 50-50. If you go in the water, 50% chance you're getting bit.
You know, it might not be that bad, but you're rolling the dice every single time.
Yeah. Do you think sharks' behavior is different by region? For example, Floridians are the armpit citizens of America. Is there such a thing as a great white trash shark?
Yes. Great white trash shark is totally amazing. Did you just coin that on the fly right here?
I did it on the drive up.
That's really good. That is really good. Well, yes. And to your point, furthermore, where are these shark attacks happening? Are they happening in Miami? No. Are they happening in Palm Beach? No. They are happening in Daytona, basically.
Exactly.
Smyrna. Do you like the way, speaking of real quick, those guys say new, they add so many syllables to it. They say New Smyrna. New Smyrna.
What do you say?
New Smyrna, which is obviously wrong. They're from there. So it must be pronounced New Smyrna. But why is it Smyrna?
I have no clue.
Listen to John Brooks and or any of them say it next time. Smyrna.
I can never
we were gonna go surf Smyrna. It's right. Smyrna.
Right.
Maybe somebody from Smyrna can call in and correct or say it accurately.
But I'm sticking with Smyrna.
I mean, Smyrna is how it's spelled. It's S-M-Y, Smyr, S-M-Y-R. It's not S...
Dude, it is the most stupid word ever.
Smyrna.
Like, it doesn't... In the English language, putting that many consonants, jamming them together... Like, there needs to be a vowel in there somewhere.
Well, I guess that's what the John Brooks is doing, is adding to it. Smyrna.
Yeah.
New Smyrna.
So, is there white trash, great white trash... like, are the South African sharks a little more elevated and sophisticated?
You'd think they would be the worst. I mean, you'd think they would be Afrikaner sharks, but maybe they're not. Maybe they're not.
Hmm.
Maybe they are. Maybe they are. You know, yeah. Drink some wine.
Yeah, like they seem to be taking a high road in 2019.
I mean, they've seemed like they've been taking a high road for a long time. Let's be honest. When was the last attack you even heard from South Africa after the McFanning brush?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, and also maybe sharks, great white. That's just what they are. Great white trash, because let's just be honest about Western Australia too. Western Australia is not a genteel land. It is more or less rednecky. And that's where the attacks are there, right?
Yep. This is exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
This could be an evolutionary step to cull the population, the shallow end of the gene pool.
I reckon the outlier here is Réunion, but maybe if Jeremy Flores has taught us anything, maybe Réunion is basically French trash. I mean, I love Jeremy. Nothing against him, but let's be honest. He's not a sophisticated... He's not wearing a beret, carrying a baguette, sipping a red wine. Yeah. Jeremy Flores is like a fighter and a whatever. So maybe the French in Réunion are the white trash French.
Wow. I cannot believe we just uncovered this right now.
I mean, it's pretty amazing.
The sharks are calling our population for us.
Is there any place where more or less white people are not at the pointy end of this great white trash attacks? I mean, is there which countries on there had a ethnically diverse population? Let's say, I mean, Réunion.
That's it.
Of course, but let's just be honest about who's getting attacked. It's always white Frenchmen.
It's either So it's America, Australia, South Africa, and Réunion.
And not South Africa anymore. South Africa's too sophisticated.
Right.
I wonder if this bodes well for South Africa in general. South Africa has become quietly super sophisticated over the last few years. Like, apartheid ended, and really since the end of apartheid, they've spent time cultivating their artistic side, their sensitive side, their romantic side, their cultured side.
They've developed some industry.
Yep.
Developing export markets.
Probably have a booming independent film scene there.
Yes, indeed.
A lot of
excellent wine producing region.
Yeah. Wow. The rise of South Africa.
Yeah.
Directly related to the fall of their shark attack. Because sharks...
Or the opposite. Or the sharks...
Yeah, the sharks don't attack anymore because there's no white trash to attack.
Exactly.
Them. Interesting.
Very fascinating.
That's totally true.
You know, how badass are killer whales? If the great white shark is an apex predator, and then you got an orca... That comes and eats whales.
Eats their livers.
I'm sorry, eats sharks.
Eats their livers, too. Like, goes directly to their liver.
So, also has an opinion on which organ.
Yeah, like I'm going to nibble. We're not going to get in a fight, and if I win, I'll eat you. No, I want your liver.
That is badass.
Yeah.
But that is ultimate apex.
I mean, that's the dang thing, though, is they call great whites, and all sharks, I do believe, or not all, probably, but at least great whites, are apex predators. How can you be an apex predator if there's a predator that's above you? Apex,
you're right.
There's one apex.
Right.
Right?
There can only be one.
There can't be two apexes.
I feel like the great white got the apex name because he's willing to eat anything.
Sure.
Whereas the killer whale, aka orca,
prefers seals.
And yeah, it's discerning.
Yeah.
It's going to eat seals. It's going to let other, you know, it has pity on other animals or beings. And it's going to eat sharks' livers.
Live and let live. Yeah. For that one.
So for that reason alone, they gave the apex title to the great white.
I feel that sympathy for orcas in captivity has gone down.
Has it?
I don't see people so sad anymore about it.
Well, it's because there's no documentary out about it right now. Once they make a documentary, everybody gets up in a tiff. Remember, tissy.
Kelly, it used to be one of Kelly Slater's real pet pet causes.
Pun intended.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe, I guess, did they let them all go? They didn't let them all go. They're still at SeaWorld, right?
SeaWorld's still thriving.
Yeah. I heard that SeaWorld not only is still thriving, SeaWorld finally made money this past year.
Really?
Yeah. They like actually had a bumper year. I think they're not, their orcas are not performing anymore, is what it is. So I think they're still floating in the tank.
Okay.
But they're not like forced into song and dance.
Right. Probably a good thing.
I mean, I don't know. Who's to say that orca didn't like it? I mean, everybody pointed at the fin and said, look at how saggy the fin is. That's sad. But what if the orcas are depressed now because they're not show tunes anymore?
I think the fact that they ate a couple of trainers was an indicator that they weren't thrilled with the exchange.
What if they're musical theater orcas? What if that was part of the theater? You got to eat a couple, you know, you have your divas in musical theater. You have diva behavior, you know, oh, chomp, chomp, chomp. But then and then all of a sudden they took away your stinking stage.
That's true. And I guarantee there is a hierarchy at SeaWorld where they're looking over at the seals that are performing it. Not the seal. Yeah, the seals or walruses or whatever that have the kids show.
Exactly.
Where they're on stage like balancing a ball. Those are the ones that get laughed at.
That's
what
I'm saying. The
orcas had the pinnacle, the apex position in that musical theater.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Speaking of musical theater, you know, a dream that I've had for a couple years?
Falling off a cliff.
This would be that. Turning Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell into a full musical production where you have an Eddie Rothman dancing and slapping a Graham Stapleberg. You have Kolohe and John John.
Gosh.
Isn't it good?
I would totally come.
It's good, yeah?
Yeah.
If anybody's listening out there knows anything about musical theater, contact me. Let's collaborate.
The reality is this needs to be in New York or London. We can't do this in San Diego.
No.
Nobody will appreciate it.
No, it'll be off Broadway or London's East or West or whichever the end for theater is. No, it has to be like a full on musical production. Imagine Eddie Rothman singing.
Oh my gosh.
I want to slap the fool. Like it'd be really it would be really, really good, no?
Dude, who would play him? I see Jason Alexander is trying out for the part.
See, I don't know enough about current musical theater, but there's got to be some, like, kind of, the guy who played the Beast, maybe, in Beauty and the Beast, could probably pull an Eddie.
I don't know who played him.
I don't either, but if you can play the Beast in Beauty and the Beast, I would imagine you could play Eddie Rothman.
What was that? What's the guy's name who played the Beast in something?
Oh, that guy.
He was from Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman, yeah.
Ron Perlman could be really good.
Eddie Rothman.
Or Jeff Garlin.
Yes.
Could even pull it off. Dude, did you see Curb Your Enthusiasm this week? With the MAGA hat and they thought he was Weinstein? Oh, God, it was so good.
Welcome to Paradise the Musical.
This is a great dream.
I
support it.
I just don't know how to realize it.
I'll get Manscaped to sponsor it.
I've even literally started writing the first part, like how it opens.
This is so good.
Yeah, I think so too.
Speaking of dreams, nightmares, I saw your article about the kid who got speared by the flying needlefish. Man. How crazy is that image?
Oof. Went through the back of his skull.
Yeah. So for people listening, this was, he was sitting in the water, right? He was sitting in the lineup surfing.
He wasn't surfing, actually.
Oh, he wasn't.
He was fishing with his family. Oh, okay. I said he was in the surf, as in, I mean, you know, it's the surf.
Yeah.
It wasn't really surf related, but Indonesia, close enough, in a boat, fishing.
I've been in boats and maybe even in the actual water when those needlefish are jumping, like giant schools of them. And this is exactly what happened. And the thing speared him through the throat.
It's crazy town.
Yeah.
At 60, I think they said it was going, or they go 60 kilometers an hour. And just razor sharp beak right into the kid's neck. Through his neck.
Brutal.
Absolutely. That image was haunting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have recurring dreams?
No.
Not reoccurring, but recurring?
Nope. Do you?
I do.
What's your recurring dream?
That's why I asked you about falling off a cliff. I've had one in the last couple of weeks, driving my car off, not intentionally, but like losing control around a turn that's too fast on a mountain road and going off the edge.
Have you Googled it?
Yeah, it claims that I am having a hard time letting go of control in my life.
It probably has something directly to do with falling in love.
I think it might.
Yeah.
I think it might.
For sure.
Yeah.
Wow.
Letting, isn't that, I mean, I, dreams have to have meaning, of, you know, like they are bubbling up from your subconscious.
Completely.
I just don't think that the meaning is necessarily super transparent. Like, you can't write a book and say every time you dream of teeth falling out, it means this.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of interpretation.
Sure.
But I think gray area for the interpretation.
If you're dreaming that and you are, something is directly happening related to losing control, then I think it's not that hard to connect those dots, as it were.
I know.
Is it terrifying? Like, do you wake up in a full sweat?
No.
Is it like, oh, cool, I crashed my car again? Like, do you live through it?
Or? There's anxiety, but there isn't terror.
Okay. So you like see the cliff coming and you're like, oh.
So the first one was approaching a turn too fast, sliding off of the road and like bursting through the guardrail, and it was a free fall. And so in the free fall, I had a lot of time to process. What do I do here? Do I stay in the car? Will that provide more padding and protection? Mm. Do I open the door and jump out and like try to land in a tree? Will that soften the fall? Like, is there any way, you know? And the dream I never made impact in the dream. I must have just woken up. The second one I had, which was a few nights ago, I slid off the road, but it wasn't a free fall. It was then like down a hillside where I'm still on terra firma, but like bouncing, the car's bouncing, I'm losing control. I have a little bit of traction, the wheel, I can't really guide the process with the wheel. So in one scenario, as it relates to my real life, it was an understanding of like, oh, I'm in free fall space here with no control. In this new one, you have
slight control.
I'm wondering if maybe like where I'm at in the relationship now, like I'm trying to wrench control back.
Your wheels are biting.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm analyzing it.
Do you, but you don't feel out of control in your relationship, do you?
No, but it's a weird dynamic where, she's a type A and I'm used to kind of like just taking charge and leading and like plan the vacation, ooh, cook, you know, I'm fine with whatever. She's also willing to do all of those things. And so I don't want to step on her toes. Maybe I am stepping on her.
Has there been some friction there?
No.
She's going to Hawaii with you, no?
Yeah.
First vacation.
Yeah.
Where are you staying?
Airbnbs.
Okay. No Pink Palace?
What is that?
You never stayed at the Pink Palace?
Oh, you're talking in Waikiki?
Yeah.
That Royal Hawaiian or whatever? Exactly. I've never stayed there.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
Is it really?
Oh, man. I've stayed there a few times. Yeah. You can get one of the... They have a new tower, which is not cool at all. In fact, it's just like Sheraton-y. But if you stay in the old building, you have to ask for it. But you stay in the old one, and it is epic. It's like, I can't remember. I must have been loaded or something. I mean, as in had money for some reason. But I got the like one of the old rooms that had, I felt like it was two bedrooms even, with a large living room and huge high ceilings. I mean, it's like classic Hawaiiana, like early, whenever it was built, you know, epic.
Wow.
Yep.
All right, so should I do one night there?
You should.
If
you can get into the old building, yes.
Okay. I'll look into it.
Yeah, totally worth it.
Do you think we should cut to commercial break real quick?
I'm so excited to hear what it is. Pay
some bills and then come back?
Let's do it.
All right. Chaz, welcome back to the show.
That's exactly, you know, I really am going to be honest with you. I have not started preparing my taxes yet. And so that is going to help me out.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we could both line our pockets and simultaneously
do some taxes,
provide a service for you and our listeners.
Yep.
We are not sponsorless, but we're entering a sponsorless era of surfing, where all these surfers obviously are being let go from teams.
I've been joking about the surf industry apocalypse for a long time.
Yeah.
It is literally not just here. It's almost over. Like, it's scorched earth, where God bless all of the Rorks and all of the Dark Seas.
Visla.
All of them, everybody who's alive. God bless them. But none of these brands are ever going to like do what those other big brands did.
They don't want to.
No, of course not. I mean, of course, it was a silly model, but it was sure fun to watch that model, right? Yeah. And it must have been fun if you were a up and coming pro surfer. There, it will be no more surf sponsorships moving forward. I mean, or minimal.
$30,000 a year. I think it's proven to be non-equitable.
Yeah.
It's just, we don't need to pay this athlete this much money to use in our advertising.
Those on tour will continue to make between, I'll say, between $500,000 and $3 point something at the top end million a year. But that's it. I don't think they will.
That's way too much money.
Well, how much do they make purely from, let's say, especially once they coal? Because the coal is coming. Don't you think the coal is coming of surfers on tour?
Yes.
What does it get cold down to again? I always forget. What is the number that makes sense?
I think it would be
23.
No, I think that's even too much. So on the women's tour, they're 17, and I think that seems about right.
Okay,
maybe 15.
So 17, and so those 17 surfers, I think they won't lower the prize purse. So those 17 surfers will be, even if you lose and drop off, you can do a year of surfing on tour and make, $200,000.
So currently, last place is $8,000.
Yeah.
So if you do 11 events, you'll get $88,000, but you also have to pay your travel out of that.
That's current, but I'm saying the coal. So now we have 17. So
half the number of surfers splitting the same amount of money.
Yep.
So it would be $16,000 for last place.
Precisely, which was so over 11. Is it 11 stops? So 11 stops, what is it?
$172,000?
Exactly. So that's what it's going to be. Add in, those guys will also be sponsored,
Not really, though.
They'll be sponsored.
The top five maybe will have sponsorships.
They'll have big sponsorships. I'll say, though, that guy down below, they'll have your vitamin water sponsorship that's going to pay you $5,000, right? Like, so you're going to take your 172 for the year. You're going to kick it up to 250. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Bottom level pro will make 250 on tour. Other than that, unless you are have Jamie O'Brien, basically, who can earn money off of views off of his YouTube channel. If you're not doing that, maybe you're going to have a couple guys with $30,000 sponsorships. Done.
So my question to you is this sponsorless era, will it be a net? Is it a better thing for surfing?
I don't think so, to be honest. I think it was guys who were flush-ish with more money were able to do things that were more entertaining, I'm going to say. I'm going to say that both the quality and diversity of clips is going to drop. Maybe what we see will be better, but there won't be nearly as much. And I guess it could be argued that it reached saturation forever ago, and we don't need any more of those kinds of clips from B-ish grade clips from Indonesia. But I don't know. I think we will mourn that this era of surfing, even though this feels better. But I look at snowboarding. I don't think snowboarding has become more interesting in the absolute demolition of the snowboard industry.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I have the exact opposite opinion. I think it absolutely gets better. I think when people have nothing and they're just doing something for the sheer love of it, that's when you see these real distinct personalities emerge. When you add money and you have to then, placate and just oblige certain sponsor obligations, and everybody has an opinion and the art is by a committee at that point, I think everything becomes homogenized, and that's where we've been for the last decade.
I hear you.
So that the Chloe Andino looks like Felipe Toledo, looks like Julian Wilson. They're all just representing a different region, but they're all kind of surfing the same way and doing the same thing. I want to get back to the era where there was Mickey Dora basically kind of pulling scams on people to fund his travel, and then hustling people on the tennis court in France so that he could go out and have dinner that night and buy some Bordeaux. And I think that's what the new world order looks like, is you get these really distinct styles of surfing and board riding that'll develop, and everybody looks different. And the only way that your clips get seen is if you have your local buddy who's also filming for free because he loves filmmaking.
That's true.
I think that's what the new world looks like, and I'm down with it.
I
don't care if they don't make money.
Are you? Yeah, obviously. I don't care about that. I just think, I feel in a humorous kind of way. I feel lucky to have lived through
the
boom and bust of surfing. But it is busted. It is over. I mean, I don't want to sound overly alarmist, but I look at the landscape now. Even the fact that, I mean, I feel that it all ended more or less overnight. I honestly feel, you look at the World Surf League, again, its website has been totally static since the end of, there's nothing new happening. Like, there used to be, since we, you know, Beach Grit, I think, is coming up on 7 years old now. In these 7 years, there was never more than 2 days when there was not one piece of surf news. They're legitimately, I mean, the shark thing is funny and the needle fish through the neck is interesting and all this, but it's also out of pure necessity. There's no more surf news. There is no more surf news.
Without the WSL is the whipping boy and generating a bunch of...
Kind of. And if they're not going to... If it's off and there's no tour happening, I mean, you know, I guess what? They're building a big wave park in Virginia or something, right? I didn't write about that, but who cares? That's boring.
Right.
Like, there's just nothing. It's crickets out there. It is crickets.
Yeah. I think that this new world order, like, I think it's actually I think it's a healthier place to be where we are taking money. We as content producers, media producers, are taking money from outside of the surf industry. Like, we're getting paid by manscaped.com or whatever the ads are that run on Beach Grit, which, by the way, I was angry at the automatic video playing on the bottom right of the screen for a period of time.
Yeah.
I'll tell you when I'm happy about it is when it is the board review.
Anonymous surfer. Yeah.
The anonymous surfer running, because...
Otherwise you don't see it.
Well, Stab also does their board reviews with Mikey Ciamarella. I don't really want to watch 5 minutes of the board review with him talking about it. I kind of just want to see how the board's working and how he's surfing on it. But if it requires a dedicated 5 minutes for me, I'm not necessarily, unless there's nothing else going on, I'm not going to watch that 5 minutes. But when Beach Grit auto plays it on the bottom right, so I'm scanning the article and doing whatever else I'm doing, but also out of my periphery, watching the anonymous surfer surf the board, it solves the problem. It's kind of a perfect thing.
It's funny. I've heard from multiple different people that they either didn't pay attention or whatever to the, like, our anonymous surfer videos are legitimately good, right?
They're very good.
I feel
the surfing, he surfs so good.
He surfs so good, and he surfs interestingly on the boards, and you can actually see how the board is performing, I think. Like, Mikey C, who wants to watch Mikey C surf? Like, which I understand Mikey Ciamarella's, his is a different thing, right? His is like, okay, you got to dedicate, like you said, you got to dedicate your time. You have to hear what he's saying about the board. And if you care enough about all that stuff, then great. Ours, we went a different direction, I think, where ours are honestly entertaining. And then also, as a bonus, you get to learn something about a board. And if you really want to learn about the board, then you go read Long Tom's. So the description of the board is in a written piece, whereas the clip is just a fun 3-minute clip.
Yeah. I thought that I wanted all the information about the board and that I care about which fins with which. But to be honest, I think I prefer it in just this peripheral view.
Well, and again, Mike Ciamarella, God bless him, but I really don't care what a 4-foot person says about a surfboard. I mean, Mikey C is so abnormally short that his experience on anything is going to be absolutely wacky. Like, if Mikey was... You're
short-shaming Mikey C?
Completely.
Because he's short, his opinion doesn't matter.
Mikey C should do board reviews for people under 5 feet tall. And then it would be like, then they could, you know, talk about something. Like, are you kidding me? Like, the sweet spot of a board and all that is so different if you're 3'8".
I know, but you scale it up. You just scale everything up or down.
You don't.
His mid-length is 6'1".
I've learned, if there's one thing I've learned in this life... In this surfing life, there's no such thing as scale. You cannot take a little 3-foot kid ripping, or Mikey C, who's 2'6", ripping, and think, oh, I'm going to take exactly what he did and put it to my dimensions. It doesn't work. Things are built for... I feel in surf, things are built... Like, the window where something works is not very much outside of what it was created for. Like, you cannot scale it up.
I bet you Mikey C is closer in stature to more world champs than you are.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I wouldn't also care what Italo is writing or what anybody, but Mikey C is honestly, Italo is short. Mikey C would come up to Italo's belly button.
Slater short.
Mikey C would honestly, if put next to Slater, Mikey C would come up to Slater's waist. Mikey C is a honest to goodness midget.
How tall is Anonymous Surfer?
Anonymous Surfer, I think, is 6 even.
Okay.
5'11", maybe.
He represents the average man.
The absolute average man. That's why it's fun to watch, too, is because, yeah, he's...
So maybe Mikey C, maybe Stab, in their infinite wisdom, recognizes that China is the new emerging world order.
Could be.
And they're pandering to the Chinese average height.
Could be. And also knowing... Because Mikey C is still half of a China person. And so, but maybe betting that coronavirus is going to knock down the height by another 3 feet of your average Chinaman, there's Mikey C.
And he's studying Mandarin right now.
Yep.
He's taking Mandarin lessons on Duolingo.
He's smart kid. Yeah. Wow, Duolingo might have been our advertisement.
It could have been.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be mad if it was. It's a fantastic product.
Mikey C. But yeah, yeah, the autoplay, all to say, though, I've heard from multiple people say that they're really, really fun. That
they it turns out to be. I hated them.
They'll accidentally get caught into it.
Yeah, hated it for a minute.
But back to your point, though, of the initial point of outside sponsors, that's how Beach Crit, and I know that people get annoyed and all of that, and, you know, pop-up ads and da-da-da, and we're always trying to fix it and making it, you know, as unobtrusive and whatever is possible, but that's how we can say whatever we want to say, right?
Exactly.
Because the surf companies, which is what I always dreamed at the start, the surf companies who advertise on Beach Crit think Beach Crit is funny, right? Yeah. And so Visla, like, they're the ones, Billabong, I mean, they're honestly the ones with a sense of humor. And I feel that if somebody advertises on Beach Crit, they're a good company because they're not taking any of this too crazily seriously, and also understand that it's all fun.
Yeah. Well, Chaz, related to this exact topic, how would you feel about a 7,000 RPM motor near your nuts?
Do you understand that thing?
Wait. Are you talking about the same thing as me?
The surf fin?
No.
Oh, what are you talking about?
Not what I'm talking about. Oh. I'm talking about the 7,000 RPM motor with quiet stroke technology. How do you feel about a 90-minute battery life, Chaz?
You're talking about the surf fin.
Nope. How do you feel about an LED light that illuminates your grooming area so that you don't have to wear a headlamp anymore?
Do I get?
This is the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0.
To be honest with you, this is what I was waiting for. I only have not Manscaped yet because I did not have the 3.0.
This is brand new, breaking news, 3.0.
It is so much better than the surf fin.
It is. It is far superior. It is a tighter, it'll provide a tighter shave than the surf fin would.
Oh, man.
So this is the public service announcement right now. You know, like with the putting your surfboard on your car upside down and backwards was my PSA last week.
Yep.
This week, it is to let people know that after 18 months of research and development, the Manscaped engineering team has released the third generation trimmer. The Lawnmower 3.0 features cutting-edge ceramic blades to prevent manscaping accidents. Millions of balls are about to be nick-free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin-safe technology.
Did the 2.0 have a charging dock?
Yeah.
It did?
Yep. This one's a UPS-powered charging dock. USB.
The charging dock is a revelation.
Isn't it?
I mean, I don't know what we did before charging docks. I mean, I don't have one for my phone, but for my lawnmower,
yep.
Just to drop it into the holder,
yep.
And have the holder charge it,
yep.
Not have to plug it in. A modern miracle.
And it runs with USB, so it's like you could just use your iPhone cube to plug in the USB from that. So anyways, listeners, I know you want one. Manscaped.com. Our promo code is the word surfing. You get 20% off and free shipping. So the replaceable blades that you had for your 2.0 also work for the 3.0.
I'm so 90-minute
battery life, 7,000 RPMs, LED light that illuminates the grooming area.
Did the 2.0 had no LED light?
Nope, it didn't. This is an upgrade.
I feel that Manscaped, the Lawnmower 3.0, would do very well at with the LED light at Burning Man. You could go shave with like your LED.
That's a place where you want to implement some hygiene.
I would imagine. I would imagine. I would imagine you're hot out there probably.
Filthy.
Yeah, filthy. Just you could shave off all your dirt.
Do you have any interest in ever going to Burning Man?
The wife went last year. Actually went with Cole Christensen of all people, or Cole Christensen was in her camp.
No way.
Yeah,
and that's so random.
Yeah, totally random. I mean, I've never met Cole Christensen, but she really liked it, and so I'll end up having to do it. Which is that would be your love hurts question for the day.
Love hurts. Brought to you by Manscaped.
Your girlfriend says, David Lee, let's go to Burning Man. Whole thing, yeah. RV camp, the $18,000 tickets, whatever it is.
Is that how much they are?
It's not that much, but it's really expensive.
I didn't know that.
That's yeah, it's very expensive.
Okay.
Whole nine though. Like she is a burner. She, you didn't know this. She kept it kind of down low.
Yep.
But is a full on burner. Loves it. Lives for it. Doesn't live for it like she clearly kept it a secret up till now.
Yep.
So it's not like.
But once a year.
But once a year, she's all in. And then she, after, just like you, when you went to summer camp. Did you ever go to summer camp as a kid? A
little bit, yeah.
And you like, you know, stay and write letters or whatever afterwards. And it always tapers off after like 3 months. But like, so it's that every year for, you know, she has the initial buildup. So it's basically 3 months of her life is more or less revolves around Burning Man. You plowing left or right?
I'm plowing right. You're in.
Do you have an interest to go?
Not personally, but I love the fact that she has an interest, and that is what the relationship is about for me, is I want a partner who is passionate and driven about things that she can infuse into my life.
Okay.
And I'm passionate and driven about certain things, and so let's go to Hawaii together, and we'll show you this little surf world, this weird little surf world, and you then take me to Burning Man, and we'll do your little thing. I'm going to do the drugs. I'm going to get naked.
All of it.
All of it.
That entire
experience. Okay. Dude, I'm all in. Plow right hard.
Does your girlfriend surf at all?
No.
So will you guys paddle out at Waikiki?
Yeah, she said she wants to do a surf lesson.
Ooh. Are you going to give her that surf lesson?
I'm a terrible teacher, so maybe not.
Yeah. When was the last time you surfed Queens? Wikes.
Last October.
Yeah. I love me a little Queens on a 15-foot board.
Dude, there's
it's pretty fun.
Even there's good shortboard waves up and down around there. You know, like there's good waves all over the place.
But even grabbing a board, like one of the 18-foot monsters from the beach there.
Totally.
It's like $30 or whatever
for
something. I can't remember what it is for an hour. But just even paddling out and catching, like the way those waves roll so slowly, there's something very, very pleasing about them.
It makes surfing easy.
Yeah,
like it's the easiest waves in the world to surf, and they're warm.
Yeah.
It's just perfectly idyllic.
Yep.
By the way, you mentioned Jamie O'Brien earlier.
Yeah.
My favorite thing that I've read on Instagram in the last couple of weeks was Derek Riley's caption for Jamie O'Brien getting barreled.
Well, what was it?
Did you not read it?
No.
It's killing me right now because I can't actually.
Was it on Beach Grit's Instagram?
I thought so, but now I'm on Beach Grit's Instagram and I don't see it. Something about Derek. Him being a Zumba and having the thighs of a Zumba instructor.
Derek's descriptives of Jamie O'Brien. I mean, you could do a whole book at some point on Derek describes Jamie O'Brien. It is so funny. It's always red hair, the color of whatever. Like Derek's descriptions of Jamie are laugh out loud funny every single time.
It truly was.
Yeah.
It truly was laugh out loud funny. And I'm looking now and I can't find it. So I'm wondering if it got deleted for some reason. Oh, okay. Jamie O'Brien is 6 feet tall with a juicy rear and the lean muscles of a Zumba instructor. And at pipe, he has a radium-worthy glow even Marie Curie would admire.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Art.
Yeah. Well, quick side note. Did you see the Aaron Hernandez doc?
I'm in the middle of it right now.
Are you?
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah, I finished it.
Were you in?
How far are you into it? It's three episodes, hour long each.
A middle episode two.
Oh, okay. Right in the middle.
Yeah. Like directly middle.
What do you think?
The first episode, I was like, yeah. Okay. You're like really dragging this out. I felt, you know, because I just thought I know the story. You know, I'm a sports fan. So read ESPN and all this and, you know, had read about Aaron Hernandez. So I kind of followed along as it was happening. And I felt that they were... just beleaguering things, just making it way more crazy. But then no, mid season or mid episode two, I totally forgot a bunch of it. I forgot like that he was gay and all that stuff.
And was he though?
He wouldn't have defined himself, but he had homosexual experiences.
I'm not even convinced by that because it's one friend from high school who's claiming that thing.
But it was also in jail. There was a guy in jail who claimed to be lovers. Like there was a,
both of those things are kind of like, an argument could be made that the guy from high school is completely making up the story.
Could be. But I think that there's enough, like evidence where of course he like, that's the thing is in our day and age, everything is defined. Right. And I'm not on the slippery slope here, but you're either gay or you're not. But I think through long times in history, you know, like, or in Egypt or whatever, like a lot of times in Egypt, younger men will experiment with each other just because there's no women around.
Yeah.
None of them can, or I'm sure maybe some of them do, but the vast majority don't consider themselves gay. They're right. Just having homosexual experiences, I guess. Not that I'm, you know, saying that I want to do that. But also, Aaron Hernandez, I think there's enough evidence that he did participate in homosexual experiences. Also, experiences? Yeah. Also, this real fine line, like super jock culture, I think it's super jock football culture where you're all showering together and all that, which they were essentially doing, right? That guy they interview on the show is the quarterback of his team or whatever. So, you know, where it's a very fine line is what I'll say. But anyway, fascinating. Completely fascinating.
It really is fascinating. Just a quick side note, that guy didn't seem credible to me. And it's started with him going, yeah, as soon as I met Aaron, I thought, oh, this is my twin.
Yeah.
You look at Aaron. Aaron's this hulking, good-looking, uber-talented guy. And then the guy that said that...
He's like a little wormy guy.
A little wormy. You're like, yeah, you wish you were his twin. There's no... So there's already this thing of him deifying
like,
or Aaron.
Like a single white female sort of, dynamic.
So you could see Aaron then, you know, is now no longer alive to speak out on this. And now him going, oh, yeah, not only were we best friends, we're also gay lovers, you know?
But I think there is, though, enough evidence where Aaron Hernandez participated in extracurricular play.
Yeah. Well, it is a very, very fascinating story. Fascinating. I recommend the documentary for anybody who wants to see it.
What do you put it on? Do you put Aaron Hernandez a slide? Do you blame football? I mean, do you just think CET? CET? Chronic?
CTE?
CTE. Chronic...
I don't know.
Whatever.
CTE, I think, is what... Yeah. But I don't blame that. I think that is a very real thing, and I think it needs to be studied a lot more, and there needs to be... It just needs to be tracked and mitigated against and all that sort of stuff.
Do you think Aaron Hernandez is just, like, basically a serial killer accidentally in a good-looking football player body?
Yeah, unfortunately. I think his traumatic childhood upbringing predisposed him to become... sociopathic.
I mean, he was just a sociopath. He just didn't connect his actions to any kind of
and he also had CTE as a result of all the head trauma from football, but I don't think that was the reason that he murdered people. I think that the murdering took place before the CTE and would have taken place despite
him dancing at the gas station right before he murders Odin Lloyd. Is such creepy footage.
I know.
He just dancing.
Well, he's on drugs.
Yeah, but he was just high. I mean, yeah. I guess that's on drugs. But
that's what it was. High on the drugs, but not high on the experience of doing.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not like I don't think he was on. He was just smoking weed, right?
No.
Oh, he was on other stuff.
Yeah, I think they even said what he was on. I forget what it was, but he did everything. You know, he was just doing anything and everything. So part of what's interesting to me. I could kind of define it in three ways. One of them is the childhood kind of upbringing and the trauma of the dad being a really, really just an asshole, basically.
The mom
then marrying the niece's husband,
yeah.
which is insane. Yeah. Like, seeing how the parents' horrible parenting affects a child is interesting to me. The other detail that's interesting to me is having everything and throwing it all away.
Like,
so he's 22 years old, he has great genetics, great looks, unbelievable talent, and $40 million a year contract to play football. And you're 22 or 23, I think, at the time when he signed that contract. And despite that, you're going to go clubbing on the weekends and murder people?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Just for fun.
Without even thinking. I mean, just to think that you're not going to get caught too. To honestly roll down your window and just blast into somebody's car and kill them both and just drive off.
For bumping into each other at a club.
Yeah.
That's what that murder was about.
Spilling a drink.
Right.
Crazy.
You're going to throw away your contract.
But he must not have been. He's just a sociopath. Like, right. He wasn't thinking about throwing stuff away. That one of the more. I mean, again, I'm only midway. But the when he got to his cell and he was so happy with it. Remember when he's talking on the phone early? Like, he's describing his cell and he's so happy to have his cell. Like, where it was all maybe just got. I mean, he was just obviously lost his mind. But yeah, feeling contained and comfortable. Like, he had everything he needed.
I think that was reflective of the fact that life in the real world is so chaotic, and I've created all of this stuff that might come back and bite me, that now you realize all I need is a bed and food and these four walls. Yep. This actually feels safe to me.
Yeah.
This is now much healthier environment for me than the outside chaos that I've created for myself.
Crazy town, though. Such it's a really, crazy story.
Yeah. And just sad, like, to see
somebody with everything.
But how much havoc they create in other people's lives, you know? Like, all these people have their hopes pinned on this guy who's going to come from out of the depravity of this horrible parenting situation and then do good, and we can kind of hitch our wagon to him. And, like, if he's making 40 mil, he could just give me 1 mil.
Yeah.
And it'll radically change my life, you know? And I can ride those coattails. But instead, he creates tons of havoc and destruction. And just makes kit, has a bunch of babies, has, you know, like, just pure
chaos,
wake of havoc for all these other people.
Who is Professional Surfing's Aaron Hernandez?
Can't wait to see.
If you had to pin one right now.
No, who's because that pins murder on people.
Sure,
stuff,
but
who's going to leave a wake
of... Which CT surfer?
Destruction.
Which CT surfer do you think could drive up to somebody at a stoplight and murder them?
None.
You don't think any of them?
None.
Come on. One of them.
None of them have murder in there.
You don't think none of them do?
Well, dude, who? You go then.
I'm
fine to say who's going to leave a wake of destruction, but I'm not fine saying who's going to murder somebody.
Okay, let's go through real quick. We got Italo's not going to murder. Gabe, I think, is too calculating to murder somebody. Too easy. Maybe Chloe Andino.
Wow.
Just going to murder. No, Chloe's too nice. Yeah, all surfers are all too... This crop of professional surfers are all too gentle. There's not a bad boy on tour.
Well, the sponsorless era that we're entering into, there's going to be some depravity because they're going to be struggling to get...
But there's not going to be enough money. Like, Aaron Hernandez, probably if he didn't go play pro ball, maybe he would have murdered somebody, but he would have just been another small-time thug who murdered somebody.
Right.
Like... So you have to have some kind of, there has to be like excess for it to really spin that way. And if there's no excess in surfing anymore, then it's just going to be a bunch of small time thugs.
I think you just need a really terrible childhood.
But did you see Italo claiming that we're not bums anymore?
No, I didn't see that.
It made major news. I mean, that's how little surf news there is. This got picked up by Reuters, New York Times, everybody. Was Italo said just he was surfing in Brazil, whatever, and somebody interviewed him, you know, after he got done, and he just said, oh, he's so excited for surfing to be in the Olympics because, you know, this is legit and surfing is legitimate, and finally it can shed its image of just a bunch of bums.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well,
we're being bums again.
I think though. We're gonna drag it back down into the bum moniker without sponsors.
Yep.
So I'm fine with that. All right, Chaz, should we close out with Barrel or Nah?
Let's do it.
I'm doing a shark edition today.
It's exciting.
I know.
Right in my wheelhouse.
All right. Barrel or Nah? Baby Shark. The song.
Baby Shark. I'll say
Baby Shark.
Baby Shark, of course. There's
how many of those do we get per year of something that uses like Gangnam Style or whatever, like the thing that really takes off?
You can't even, it's not per year. There's one every 5 years.
Really?
Well, yeah. Gangnam Style,
yeah,
you're right, was probably the most recent. Prior to that, the Macarena.
Yeah, okay,
you're so right. Maybe once a decade even.
We get one of those.
Anthem of the people.
Baby Shark is one of those. I would be anti it, but my friend's 2, now 3-year-old son sings it so cutely and gets so excited to sing it that I'm all barrel.
That is the problem with Baby Shark. As annoying as that song is, when you see a cherubic baby responding to it,
yeah,
how can you not love it?
That's the thing.
It's so dang charming.
So every adult singing it, every whatever, I'm over all that, but a little chubby cheek 2-year-old.
Yeah.
Just eyes ablaze with pure joy at Baby Shark. There's something really inherent in it that must make kids feel really good.
Kids are immune, or there's no kid immune to the charm of Baby Shark.
Yeah.
The dopamine that pulses through their system. Like, you cannot not love the song as a baby.
All barrel.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah. You like it too, yeah?
I love it,
yeah,
because of that exact reason. Yeah. I was with last year in Maui in October at a friend's house, and their daughter just had the time of her life listening to this. And despite the fact that we listened to the song 100 times on repeat, it never got old.
Pure joy.
Pure joy.
Yeah.
Baby Shark, full barrel.
All the way.
Me too.
Double roof drag.
Yeah. Okay. Barrel or not, number two. Painting stripes on the bottom of your board is a shark deterrent.
Nah. I think doing anything as a shark deterrent, I'm going to say nah. Like, okay. It's a real, unless you're in Florida where it's 50-50 odds, outside of Florida, let's be honest. I mean, I've been hammering this shark thing to try to get people to stop surfing. I'm doing the will of the people, the will of the crusty surfer. But nobody's going to get attacked surfing. Let's just be honest. You're not, I'm not. Unless you're in Florida, then it's 50-50. But outside of that.
But if you put that, is the science even in on that shark deterrent thing? Like, how do you run the study?
No, I think they don't. I think they vaguely know, how sharks maybe hunt and then in shadows or something. And it's a purely pure theory. My favorite one, again, I think we talked about it last time even, was the kid who got a Shark Bands bracelet for Christmas and then got bit by a shark the next day. Like, it's so, I mean, you cannot make your odds on making, we could make a shark guaranteed not to, no biting shark thing, a hat or whatever. There's so few shark attacks and not enough people would buy the thing where you could have 100% success rate. The fact that Shark Bands, a kid got bit wearing Shark Bands, I don't know how in the world they didn't fold up the next minute. I love that Stab was on bet on that too. It was so funny.
So I bet it isn't 100% guaranteed not to get. They're probably saying it's 99% effective, which is pretty compelling as a sales pitch. But what that looks like on paper is they have to sell 100 of them. And if one kid gets bit, they're okay.
I mean, it's just insane.
They're safe, legally.
It is insane. If I'm buying a shark repellent, I better be 100%, because chances are near 100 I wasn't going to get bit anyway.
Right.
But speaking of not getting bit and or getting bit, did you read about the guy whose wife dreamed that he was going to get bit?
No.
Get a load of this. It was on Beach Crit. Fantastic story. So this guy got bit on the foot in Australia. Maybe you saw it on Beach Crit. Like, his bloody foot and cut to the bone. Bad one. Didn't take his foot off. But a good shark nip. 2 days before, his wife had a dream that her husband was going to go surfing and get, she saw him sitting on a board. It was dark and stormy, kind of dark and cloudy. He was out surfing and got his leg tugged by a shark. And then she woke up. This dude hears the dream, proceeds to go surfing on a dark, stormy day, sharky weather day, at a break called Sharky's that was known for shark attacks.
And it came to fruition.
And it came to fruition.
Wow.
Yeah, it's good.
Have you ever had a premonition?
Yes. Have you?
Yes.
I would get them in Oregon a lot. It's creepy.
It's a real thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's real. Do you think it's real?
Yeah, dude. I've only had one that was like distinctly different than just, let's say, a thought.
You like felt like the electric jolt.
Truly.
Yeah.
I was leaving the house. I was 16 years old, and I said goodbye to my parents who were sitting in the backyard, went and said goodbye to them, walked out the front door, and as soon as the screen door shut, and it was that cue of the screen door shutting, I got stopped in my tracks. And the feeling was, I might not ever come back here. Like, I'm leaving now, maybe for the last time ever. And I literally stopped and just like processed it. And then thought, well, what do I do? Do I go back inside and like cower inside? How?
Because you're stuck. Because maybe the house could have got struck by lightning or something.
Right.
You don't know what.
And it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to die. It was just this. I'm not coming back here. Was the feeling. And then I thought, well, no, I'm going to shake this off. I don't know what this feeling is, but weird. I'm just going to shake it off. Move forward. 5 minutes later, got in a really bad car crash.
Oh.
Really bad car crash. Like. Ended up in the hospital, all this stuff. And two months later, I mentioned that moment of premonition to my dad and my stepmom. And my stepmom was dead silent. And she goes, when the screen door shut, I heard it from the backyard and I had the exact same premonition. And she goes, I even grabbed your dad's arm and said to him, like, something's up and like, we shouldn't let David leave.
Wow.
And then he's like, what are you talking about? And he kind of brushed her off, but she had the exact same premonition. We didn't uncover that for 2 months.
So next premonition you have, will you act differently upon it?
I feel like I have to.
Yeah. Like you'll say something. You'll just at least let it be known that you felt something.
Yes.
Hmm.
But I would like for that to be something positive. Not something, yeah. Not like imminent death.
Sure.
Be like premonition, I'm going to win the lotto.
Today. Ooh, I wonder if you get a premonition of that. That would be a nice premonition to have
it
come true.
I know, especially since I don't play the lotto.
Yeah, just getting that one ticket.
Exactly.
Get a Shark Bands while you're at it.
All right, well, we're going gnaw barrel on shark deterrence.
Yeah, on any of them. I'm all gnaw on shark deterrence.
All right, final, barrel or gnaw, the Sharknado film franchise.
I've never seen one of them, to be honest. Have you?
I've never watched one.
Here's the thing. I'm gonna say nah out of the gate because I don't like campy film ideas, or I don't like campy ideas. I have them a lot myself. Like an idea where you think it's so funny, where it's just based off like one silly joke, and then
like a musical for a book that you wrote.
That's true, but that one's. I feel that it really seeing Eddie Rothman sing and dance. I feel would. Powerfully affect people. We'll leave this up to the marketplace. The marketplace will decide if Welcome to Paradise should be a musical. But like Snakes on a Plane, where the whole concept is in the title, haha, Snakes on a Plane, right? Sharknado, tornadoes and sharks. Like, I just don't like that kind of stuff. I think that it's funny and you can get 100% of the humor out of it from the title alone, as you would from the watching the film.
I'm glad that you said this because I've listed a few of the titles. And I'm going to ask you, I'm going to give you multiple choice and you have to tell me which of these is fake.
Okay.
You get four titles. Sharknado 3. Oh, hell no. Sharknado 2. The second one. Sharknado. Global swarming. Sharknado. Heart of Sharkness.
I'm going to say, oh no, is the fake.
Incorrect. Trick question. They're all real.
Wow. Amazing. I mean, those are, see, but that's like, that's funny.
Sharknado 2, the second one.
I mean, that's funny, right?
It's pretty good.
It's totally good, but it's not funny enough to go see Sharknado, the second one.
You think the title is the punchline? That's as good as it gets.
100%. The title is as funny as it's as big a laugh as you're going to have about that whole thing.
Yeah.
And so then you're just. It's great to waste some time.
I think you just get high and watch them. That's got to be the only...
But like getting... Okay, what were the dumb movies, the camp movies that you watched as a kid that you thought were so funny and campy? Like Army of Darkness for me, or the whole Evil Dead franchise.
You watched those as a kid?
Yeah, Army of Darkness.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Did you ever watch Army of Darkness?
No.
See, but I feel that Army of Darkness ages well. Maybe I'm wrong. I haven't seen it in a long time. But have you? You've never seen it.
No.
So go watch Army of Darkness. But maybe that's how kids feel about Sharknado. Maybe their 13, 15-year-old kids are watching these Sharknado movies and think it's so camp and funny.
Yeah.
But there was I loved Army of Darkness, and there's a New Zealand horror film that I feel is did feel, and maybe it's just camp also, but I don't think it is. I think it's genius. Called Dead Alive, that is so, so, so funny, I thought. You should watch Dead Alive.
From the 80s?
Would have been 80s, yeah. Okay. Or late 80s, early 90s, maybe.
All right, I'll put it on my list.
It's a New Zealand horror film.
I like it.
Yeah, and but it's like campy horror. Okay. Very funny, I thought.
All right, I'm in.
Yeah, but all to say, though, maybe that's my kid version of Sharknado. Maybe kids are having, and kids will grow up and then, you know, tell their kids, hey, there was this really funny movie called Sharknado, or a franchise called Sharknado, which is about sharks and tornadoes, and they'll watch them, and it'll be all campy and funny.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes so sensational that people watch it just because it's that sensational. Like,
but that's the problem, is I feel they blew the lid off. Like, Army of Darkness, there's a real storyline, right? And with Dead Alive, there's a real storyline. Like, there's a thing happened that's not believable, but it's not just straight camp. It's not like, yeah, if you say, what if, you know, there was sharks and tornadoes, you know, where, okay, that's, I guess, funny. But it's funny. Oh, I don't need to see it for it to be funny.
They made 6 of them.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
I mean, the budgets on them must be so minimal. And they very clearly have a following, because they wouldn't make any of them if they weren't selling.
Right, right. All right, so Sharknado franchise, we're going?
I'm going nah. Okay. I'm saying, when the joke is that heavy-handed, when it's just like something so absurdistly wacky, then I'm not in. I need subtlety in my camp.
Okay.
Like Welcome to Paradise the Musical. It's exactly like that.
Exactly. All right. Well, another entertaining week of The Grit, Chaz. This has been a real pleasure.
I'm going to say, it's a good thing we're around, or else it would be, people would try to find something, some way to engage with surfing. It'd be crickets. There's no ain't that swell. They'd have to go surfing. Imagine if that's what people, the only way to experience surfing was surfing.
What a sad state of affairs that would be.
I don't want to live in that world.
I'm going to be in Hawaii next week. Should we try to do a remote?
Oh, yeah.
Recording?
I know how to do it.
Okay.
Do you know how to do it?
I have methods.
I did one that I was super impressed with. We don't have to talk about it on air.
And the quality, sound quality was good?
100%.
Oh, done. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Next Friday.
It's really easy.
Okay.
It'll be a surprise to people. It'll sound so good.
Okay.
And they won't know how it was done, because I'm, no, you're in Hawaii and I'm here.
All right. Okay. We'll see you next Friday then. Until then, Chaz.
Get barrel.